Good morning. Good morning. I lost my voice.
Good morning. Wow, I really did lose my voice. I was nervous about this. I thought this would happen. And it did. Because I know the future. A couple weeks ago, it was the 4th of July, as you probably know that already. I had a chance to go back to my family's, my mom and dad's house, and all my nieces and nephews. I'm going to try to clear my throat. Give me 1 second. See if that's any better. All of my nieces and nephews, they were there. It's awesome. But one of the things I continue to rediscover about my nieces and nephews is that the whole family, regardless of what sibling they're a child of, they're all like super intense. And I found this out because we just played games all weekend. It was like, you know, we played bags with my one nephew and he's like, I have to win. And I played, you know, shuffleboard, or not shuffleboard, what do they call that? Air hockey. It's like mini shuffleboard where you try to score instead of put. Anyways, air hockey with one niece, and she had to win. At one point, it was so beautiful. I was playing pool with my niece Sophia, and it came down to the last ball. And she knew that if she took this shot, then it would open me up to take the shot to win. And you should have seen this little girl's face. I mean, she was like, she stood there with a pool cue and she's like, I don't want. And she was frozen because she was so intense. She wanted to win so badly that she's like, if I take this shot, I know that I'm going to lose because my uncle is going to, you know, hit it into the pocket. I don't really know pool terms. Into the pocket and she'll lose. And so she was just so intense. She was frozen because like, no, I might lose on this next shot. I'm like, Sophia, it's okay. Just hit the ball. It's not a problem. It's not going to be a big deal. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. You don't have to be intense. Just take the shot. It's fine. So, okay. She, you know, stops crying and she takes the shot, sets me up perfectly. And I sunk the ball and totally win the game. You guys, she's in second grade. She has to learn sometime. But it's funny because, like, honestly, they're all so intense. There's not one game that they'll play that they don't put their whole heart into it. Like, whatever they're doing, they just put their whole heart into that. I mean, I'm sure you know people like that, right? No matter what it is that they're doing. If they're playing music, it's one thing to play the notes, or it's one thing to sing the notes. It's a whole other thing to, like, no, actually, I'm putting my heart into this song. I'm putting my heart into this instrument. Because what it means is, all of me is in this. I'm putting my whole heart into this. All of you probably know what it's like. You're playing a game. And you're not just playing the game. You're putting your whole heart into the game. You're risking everything on this game. Or even if you're a writer. I mean, you maybe have heard this before, where there's people who, they'll write. And you're like, that's fine. You're writing okay. But you know what your writing is lacking? It's lacking heart. The thing it's missing is missing your heart. What does that mean? It means it's missing you. You have all the right words, but you're missing you. I think one of the reasons why sometimes we play, we sing, we write, we live without heart is because we know that if I put my heart into this, I'm going to be risking everything, because to put your heart into something is to risk your very life. And I think that might be one of the reasons why a lot of people don't live with a lot of heart. I think it's one of the reasons why a lot of people don't play with a lot of heart, why we don't sing with a lot of heart. Actually, I think this is one of the reasons why we don't worship with our hearts. I don't know if you knew this. Did you know that in the United States, 48% of Catholics are not absolutely certain that they can have a relationship with God? I'm going to pause. Let's go over that again. 48% of Catholics are not convinced that they can actually have a relationship with God. Now, that would make sense if you're talking to 48% of atheists. But 48%, that means this: half the room is here this weekend and doesn't actually believe, is not convinced that they could have a personal relationship with God. Well, no wonder you don't put your heart into worship. If I don't know if there's a personal God on the other end. I think this is one of the reasons why another statistic when it comes to Sunday Mass, something like only 27% of us go to Mass on Sunday. So not only do we not live with heart, even when we show up, even the 27% who show up, because imagine how many of you like go to Mass regular basis on Sundays. Okay, so a couple of you. So even when we do show up, do we worship with our hearts? When we do show up, do we actually put our heart into the mass? Or do we just kind of show up and go through the motions? The reason I ask this is because I work on a college campus, and I remember one morning, we have mass at the crack of 10:30 on Sundays. And so it is, you know, it's really hard to get out of bed in time for mass, which is literally down the hall from the dorms. And we have people. I remember one morning, there was a young woman in the choir, and she leaned over to the guy next to her, and she whispers, looking out over the congregation, "I see dead people." Because everyone showed up for mass, they're like, "Amen, and with your spirit, okay, fine." And so when we do show up, we don't even worship with our hearts. We don't live with our heart. We don't put our heart into our song. We often we don't worship with our whole heart. You know why? I think it's because if you worship with your heart, you're risking your whole heart. If you worship with your heart, if you worship with heart, you're risking everything. And yet, here's the question. Would it be worth it? What we're doing here, you've heard this again and again, and you're going to hear it again and again, that in a few moments, what we're going to do on this altar is we're going to take bread and wine, and by the power of the Holy Spirit, that bread and that wine is going to become the very body and blood of Jesus. I don't know if you have ever heard this. In John chapter 6, Jesus says this. He says, "Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you will not have life. Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, unless you receive the Eucharist, you won't even know what it's like to live. You won't even be able to live the life that I want for you." Later on, at the Last Supper, he said, "Okay, now, if you want to know how to love me, do this in memory of me." That Jesus Christ has given us his body and blood in every single mass. And yet, what do? We show up when we worship without heart. Even though you probably have heard this your whole life, that the Eucharist is really Jesus, we show up when we can worship without heart. That's why I think that's one of the reasons why God has given us the Eucharistic miracles. Have you ever heard of any of the Eucharistic miracles? You heard of them? Say, here's three. The first one is from a place called Lanciano, Italy. This is back in the 7th century. Lanciano, Italy, there was a priest and he was saying mass. And in the middle of the mass, basically when he was consecrating the Eucharist, he had a crisis of faith. He's like, "I don't know if this is really Jesus." And that's when Jesus is like, "Oh yeah? Well, let me prove it to you." And in his hands, as he elevated the host, the bread literally became flesh in his very hands. In the chalice, the wine literally became blood in the chalice. And so this is kind of a big enough deal that they decided, let's keep that. And so if you went to Lanciano, Italy, you can see this. You can see this in the wall right by the tabernacle. There is the host still there that has become flesh, and there is the wine still there that's become blood. Now, that's pretty cool. That's 1,300 years ago. But here's an even more cool thing about this, is that every day on the feast day of that thing happening, the blood, it's just dried up, becomes liquid again. In 1970, they sent a sample of that Eucharist to a doctor. He said, "Could you examine this and tell us what it is?" The doctor said, "Well, he examined it under the microscope and said, "Well, this is human flesh. Tell us more." "Well, it's from a man. The blood is AB positive, I think, blood. And the flesh the flesh is heart tissue." Years later, actually only 25 years ago, the second, another miracle, there's many of them, but just three today. 25 years ago, 1991, in Buenos Aires, Argentina. That's what you have to say, Buenos Aires. You know what I'm talking about? Okay, in Buenos Aires, at one point in mass, after mass, the priest, he found a host lying on the ground. Just a normal host like we have. It was after mass. Someone had taken the host and then dropped it, discarded it, hit it, something like this. Dropped it there. The priest was like, "Okay, well, shoot. Pick up the host, the consecrated Eucharist, and put it in a glass of water. Because if you're not going to consume it, you put it in a glass of water until it dissolves, and then you pour it into consecrated ground." He comes back a couple days later, and instead of dissolving, this host had developed, there was these five red, essentially, blobs in there. And it congealed, and there's actually even something had scabbed inside this glass. And so again, they said, let's take it to the bishop. Bishop happens to be a guy you might know right now. His name is Jorge Bergoglio, a.k.a. Pope Francis. Pope Francis, Jorge Bergoglio, says, hey, let's examine that. They actually sent it to some doctors. This is one doctor. He's a pathologist. His name is Dr. Zugibe. And he researched it, and he was like, oh, my gosh, this is phenomenal. And he sent it to a doctor in New York City and a doctor in California, not telling him where it came from, and said, can you tell me anything about this? These doctors said, okay, sure, I'll examine this under the microscope. Yep, I can tell that these cells came from a human man. They're AB blood type. Yep, they come from the heart tissue. But one of these doctors said this. He said, actually, he could tell exactly what part of the heart it came from. It was the myocardia. If you know anything about the myocardia, that's the left ventricle of the heart. It's the part of the heart that pumps oxygenated blood into the rest of the body. I think about this. We show up to Mass and we're like, we don't have any heart as Catholics. We show up to Mass and we worship without heart. We can go to Mass on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, and even if we're there, we can be like, going through the motions, and we don't have any heart. And the truth of the matter is this, actually at every single Mass, we don't just have our heart, we have God's heart. The very heart of God in every single Mass. And it's again, it's not just any part of the heart. It's the very deepest part of the heart. It's the part of the heart that pumps blood into the rest of the body. In fact, that's what the Second Vatican Council said about the Eucharist. It said, the Eucharist is the source and the summit of all the Christian life. It's the source of every grace you've ever received is in the Eucharist. The source of every grace that any human being has ever received is in the Eucharist. Because why? What's the heart do? What's the myocardia do? What's that left ventricle do? It pumps out oxygenated blood into the rest of the body. So if you've had any grace in your life, it's come from this altar. If you've ever lived with heart in any way whatsoever, it's come from the heart of Jesus. And yet we show up for Mass and we show up with hard hearts, which I think is just another amazing thing. In Orvieto, Italy, priest was saying Mass, and in the midst of it, he has a crisis of faith. Now, here's the thing. Every time I say Mass, every time Bishop says Mass, or our fathers say Mass, the Eucharist always changes. There's always a Eucharistic miracle, even if we can't see it. I kind of consider it a point of pride that the Eucharist has never turned to flesh in my hands, because it seems like it always happens when a priest is doubting. I'm like, nope, not me. I believe it. So This priest is doubting that it's the Eucharist. He elevates the host, and all of a sudden, in his hands, the host starts bleeding. Some of the blood lands on the corporal, on the cloth, on the altar, and some of the blood falls to the ground onto the marble. Now, they took the blood on the corporal, on the cloth, again, had it researched, had it examined. Guess what? From a man, AB blood type. Interesting, when they gave it to some of these doctors, same thing with the other miracle in Buenos Aires. When they gave it to these doctors were saying, this is remarkable. Where did this blood come from? Where did these cells come from? And finally told them, this one doctor was an atheist. Where did these cells come from? He said, actually, they came from a consecrated host, from a Catholic Mass. And the guy interviewing the doctor said the doctor's face immediately just turned white. He's like, I don't know how to make sense of this. Because not only was it the flesh from a human heart, he said, the thing that puzzles me, you could be trying to trick me. He says, the thing that puzzles me is this. When I examined the cells, they were alive. You know, I don't know if you know about this, about blood cells. They die within 15 hours of being outside the body. When this man examined this was hundreds of years, decades after they were out. And he's like, they're still alive. I don't know how this is possible. It's possible, why? Because Jesus Christ gives us his heart at every Mass. some of that blood, as I said, in Orvieto, fell on marble. Question, what does blood do when it hits marble? It just stops. Just, there it is. But in this moment, what happened was, it's crazy. It hit the rock, hit the stone, hit the marble, and it penetrated it. That makes sense when the cloth would absorb this, of course. It hit stone, it hit marble, and it penetrated the marble. When the blood of Christ came into contact with rock, it didn't get stopped. It penetrated and went even deeper. And I know that so many of us, we come to Mass without heart. And when we do come to Mass, we might have a heart, but it's a stony heart. In that case, I just want to praise God. Because you might be someone here who showed up to Mass with a stony heart. Well, you are in the right place. Because you're about to receive the God himself whose blood can penetrate stone. You're about to receive the blood from the heart of a God that is unstoppable. You're about to receive blood from the heart, the body, and the blood of a God who penetrates stony hearts, who melts hardened hearts, and who can give life to dead hearts. Is the last thing. Still, I know that this is probably not news to anyone. You probably heard all this before. And that's why I just want to say that's it's interesting because we may have heard this before and then still skipped Mass. We may have heard this before and then when Sunday rolled around, we're like, I'm just really tired or I've got sports and I'm an intense sports player. Mass rolled around. I know it's important. I know it's the heart of Jesus, but you know, I got work. Basically, what we're saying is this. Here is every Mass where God, who's risking everything on us. Why? Because to put your heart into something is to risk your very self. To put your heart into it is to risk yourself. And if we know this, that at every Mass, God is risking his very heart, and we choose not to go, what we're saying is, God, I know you're risking everything. I know you're giving me your whole heart. I just don't care. I don't care about your heart, Jesus. I don't care about what you want, Jesus. I want what I want. Last thing. That's what I always think of my mom. So the whole family's kind of intense. And years ago when I was growing up in my mom and dad's house, every time my mom's birthday or Mother's Day rolled around, all of my brothers and sisters would say, Mom, what do you want us to do for your birthday? And my mom would say something like, you know, it'd be really great if you kids could just, actually, could you all just clean your rooms? That would be awesome. We look at her like, yeah. Like, what do you really want, though? Okay, she'd say, well, how about this? How about you just, if you could just not fight all day. Yeah, Mom, you don't know us very well, do you? Okay, why don't you kids go out? Just, you know, you could rake the lawn, that'd be great. Isn't there something else you'd rather have, Mom? So what would happen is, my two older sisters, they'd borrow some money and borrow the car and then go shopping because they like to shop to get something for my mom for her birthday. My older brother and I, we'd go outside, get on our BMX bikes, ride around all day. And at the end of the day, we'd call my mom out into the lawn and say, Mom, come and watch this trick that we learned for your birthday. My little brother, he liked to draw. So he, you know, he'd take his crayons and he'd draw a picture of a dinosaur. Mom, this is dinosaurs for your birthday. And now when we did this for my mom, she always looked at us. She always smiled. She always said thank you. She loved us. She would take anything from us. She would accept anything from us. But I can imagine there was something behind her eyes, something behind her smile of like, this is, thank you so much. I receive it. Thank you for your gift. But you know what? This isn't what I asked for. Thank you, but it's not what I asked for. And I think sometimes we do the same thing when it comes to God. God, what do you want? What do you want us to give you? And God finally reveals to us this at the Last Supper. He says, okay, if you want to love me, take this, all of you, and eat of it. If you really want to love me, if you want to know what I want from you, I want you to take this, all of you, and drink from it. This is my blood for you, from my very heart to your very heart. If you love me, do this. And we're like, yeah, I find you in the woods, God. But God, I want to worship you the way I want to worship you. And so down the street, there's this other church that has insane music. It's so good. It's like this. Or down the street, there's another church that has really good preaching. Not like Father. He's awful. These other guys are awesome. Down the street, there's this great church with really good youth ministry. Not like my parish that just has like kind of so-so youth ministry. And so, God, I'm going to go over there because I really get a lot for myself over there. I imagine at that point, God would look and say, well, maybe I'm glad you're doing something, but you know what? It's not what I asked for. When I choose to give God what I want rather than what he's asked me to give, just like when my brother and I would learn a bike trick for my mom's birthday, who am I loving? Am I loving the person that I'm giving the gift to, or am I loving myself? If I give someone a gift that I wanted to give them even when they asked for something else, I'm not loving them, I'm loving me. And for all of us, we need to know this, that Jesus Christ has specifically, God himself has specifically asked us, if you love me, if you want to be mine, if you want to give me your heart, here's the thing, I want, do this. Do this. Because at every mass, Jesus has risked everything. At every mass, Jesus gives us his very heart. The only question is, will I show up and give him my heart back?